Mini-episode 1818 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at Sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late-night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1818. You have with you here today FDH Lounge dignitaries Rick Morris and Ben Chu. Ben, usually here in his capacity as our FDH Hoops analyst, but occasionally to talk some other subjects, whether it be the streaming business or if there are any TV shows that both he and I are closely following. And thanks to my recommendation, he got into Severance, watching season one, I think after the fact, basically. I think well after the fact. I was watching that at the time and suffering through the last couple of years waiting for season two. And then season two, we both kind of got into it here, and we're watching along the way. And the finale just dropped this past Thursday evening, and so we're here to talk about that. All of our thoughts on what was, I think, the blockbuster that was promised to us. Ben Chu, pleasure to have you in here, as always, my friend. And I know you got a lot of thoughts on what we saw.
Oh, yeah, there is. It's got... Season three is either going to be really interesting or really bad, Rick. I can already sense it now.
I think it's on track for greatness. I've been saying, you know, in season two, you could see a path to where this show becomes goated, to where we're talking about this at the end of it the way that a lot of people are. Breaking Bad, the people that really love The Wire talking about it, is that there's a number of shows that you hear talked about as the greatest of all time, and I think it could make its way into that conversation. And I think a big part of that is being able to deliver on these very, very big moments. Another show that we could talk about that you and I both followed and you and I both reviewed was Succession. And if you look at the Succession finale, the way that we kind of had it built up, I feel like that kind of lived up to expectations. Justified is another one of these shows that people bandy about as, at the very least, one of the greatest of all time. And its season two finale is definitely on sort of a Mount Rushmore of the best shows of Justified. I don't know that it was the greatest show out of the whole Justified series, but the season two finale really was pretty special. I actually, maybe it's recency bias, I'm putting this one just a little bit above both of those. I mean, it was similar to the Succession finale. It was essentially a mini movie. They had the extra time. They made the most of it. It was, what, 76 minutes, I think, and every minute counted, Ben.
Yeah, and I mean, especially with the lead up from the penultimate episode, it felt more like a movie than anything else. And we got a little bit more insight into just what the Lumen Corporation is and just all these other things. And then now we have the whole Innie versus Audi Mark debate. And then also the whole discussion of Miss Casey, his wife at the same, excuse me, Audi Mark's wife.
Yeah.
And in a way too, it's like, it's one of those shows that the delay mainly, as we all know, was a little bit pandemic related. And then there was the Hollywood strike as well. Mm-hmm. So those were two of the bigger things that delayed the 3-year span. But you could tell they did very earlier on. I felt the pacing was a little interesting, mm-hmm. But now, like in those final three episodes, they really poured a lot of plot devices and things into the matter. And it feels like they're setting it up for a very interesting season three. And because we don't really know where they're going to go from here. Like, obviously, you know, we don't want to. This is the spoiled review, but we're mm-hmm. also like, there's still a lot of unanswered questions. And essentially, sure. We end the season with Mark and Helly together. And it's going to be really interesting to see how they sort of bring it back. Because at least for most of the season, Rick, it was more focused on Mark trying to contact himself at some point. It's a really interesting end to the season, the way that they played it out.
Yes, it was. And I will say this, that this is a thought that I'd had in my head that I'm going to bring this up jokingly, because this won't be the case, because the way that this is, this is basically, we heard the statistics, I think, this past week that Apple TV Plus is just bleeding money, but this is a big, big, big hit for them. So they're going to want to keep it going, not just through season three, which has been renewed, but probably season four, maybe even a season five, although it seems increasingly hard to see how you get that far out with everything they've given us thus far. But like, there's a case to be made that season three could be like a 5-minute epilogue to this that you release on YouTube. You know, like Mark, Audi Mark, you know, arrives home at the end of the day, and Gemma was like, "Well, I'm glad to be here, but you really put me through something with your innie today. And I was told that ultimately your innie, you know, had a thing with Heliar, but, you know, but you're home now." And he's like, "Well, I got fired." And she's like, "Well, we're going to be able to sell the rights to what happened to us, and we'll be able to live off that the rest of our lives." Like when Audi Mark, Mark Scout, arrives home, it does seem hard to see where you go from there, because he could just refuse to ever go back in. So they seem to be setting this up. There's a lot of people that are speculating that, like, they're setting it up where somehow or another, Mark and Helly are going to, any Mark and Helly are going to be able to stay inside somehow. And that the shoe will be on the other foot. It will be Gemma that will be trying to get him out of there. But that's also going to involve trusting Cobell. Cobell knows how much that chip in her head means. I think they went out of their way to show us that Cobell is not trustworthy, that she was a situational ally in this regard. But the more that Gemma and Mark's sister end up trusting Cobell, the more I think they will regret it. So there are a lot of, you know, very, very, very looming threads as season three approaches, whenever that is, hopefully sooner rather than later.
And I think one of the things too, and this was discussed, I've read multiple articles about this now, is that when we see drama shows like this, and they essentially, the first two seasons are usually world building seasons, right? Mm-hmm. And it feels like now they've built the world now, but now like they've blown it up a little bit. We got a little bit more information about Loom and the company. We got a little bit more about the goats. We also learned a little bit more just overall in terms of how, you know, what Milchick might already know and just the issues that he had to deal with this season.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a bit, it started off a little slower than I would have liked, but I felt like they answered a lot of the questions later on, but they still left enough in like the sandbox for the plot to grow from that point. But again, we've seen in drama shows specifically, I would say like Lost and Yellow Jackets ran into this problem early on in their future seasons. Like when you run out of plot lines, like you get kind of stuck, and they still have plenty of plot, but it's going to be really interesting to see where they go with, you know, Heliar and Mark at that point to really because essentially the season ended with them running off together. So what ends up happening is, well, what happened? Is Lumen, how is this going to change? How's everyone going to stay together at this point? And, you know, we also have that whole storyline with Irving too, that we kind of got smatterings of it near the end, but I guarantee you they didn't just have him leave the show for the sake of leaving the show. There's something else going on at some point.
Sure.
And we're going to learn more background on that as well.
You would think, because this would be the easiest way to do it, you would think that Rigabi was the one that he was in communication with. They kind of bring her in and out, you know, as needed, when they need to advance the plot line here. But this is a thing where it is very interesting in terms of with Milchick, as you mentioned about him, because some of the speculation that I've seen thus far on Reddit is that whole pose with Dylan and the marching band defiantly staring down Milchick there at the end, that's going to play into season three and perhaps thus enable Innie Mark and Helly to stick around a little bit longer in there. And that it was pointed out that for all of the propaganda that is given to, you know, the Innie workers about this and that and whatever, there'd been that thing about the micro debt uprising and those cards, you know, with the pictures of it and the bloody uprising, that like that was something they were trying to put in their heads and maybe scare them about. But it's actually playing out now. This actually is the uprising, because you have all these. It was established, I think, that the band, they're a bunch of Innies also. And so Helly's kind of call to arms that she gave them really was kind of stirring and really kind of got that there. So there's one case to be made that that's how it happens as far as Mark and Helly being able to stick around and be severed a little bit longer. There's another scenario as well, but that one there is something that I think has some legs to it.
Yeah, and also we have to figure out what Dylan's character is going to do for the rest of season three, too.
Yes.
And it showed a little bit of, it showed a lot of growth from him, because I felt like we discussed this in season one. He was kind of a side character that is just there as part of the team. But now his growth is going to be, was seen over the season, and it's going to be really interesting to see if there's any interplay with his outie self at some point again, too. Because that's, they built that up so heavily in season two. So it's going to be really interesting. And I think on top of this too, Rick, one of the big questions I think is still kind of unanswered at the end of the day is that, is there going to be anything that we discuss with someone who has been, you know, we still don't really know what Lumen does to the end of this day. Right. We still don't really know. Like we've got a lot of breadcrumbs so far, but I feel like we're going to get more of a piece of bread in season three and going into season four. And I would assume, too, I'd be shocked if they didn't get to a season five, especially since Apple TV Plus at this current timeline doesn't have a huge roster of big hits at the moment.
Yeah.
I mean, they essentially brought Ted Lasso back for an additional season 2 years later. So it's not really – they really – again, it's not a loss for Apple, because we're talking about their trillion-dollar company. Like $1 billion to them is like $10 to us.
Sure.
But it feels like this is one of their, this is their headline shows, the show that everyone talks about. It feels like everyone watches, at least from people that I know that, you know. And it's one of those shows that's just rife with moments of comedy, moments of drama. And I think we all know pretty much they're going to sweep the Emmys in the drama category this year. I cannot think that, outside of maybe some stealing by the White Lotus, I can't really see any competition for them currently.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, you know, in a just world, they really would sweep this because of so many great performances here. The thing with Dylan that's very interesting is, and this is not something that I've seen talked about much on Reddit thus far, but we, in the last episode, we basically doubled the amount of contact that we had seen between the innies and the outies, because it went from 2 to 4. In the case of Irving, that was the most subtle, that somehow or another, the innie and the outie were able to send somehow kind of coded messages to each other. I don't know that either one of them necessarily could tell you exactly what it was, but they were able to somewhat kind of do that. Season one, of course, Helly and Helena, the whole thing when Helly tried to quit and Helena, who we would later learn is an Egan, shut her down. And basically, and that was sort of the mission statement, it seemed like, as far as the way that outies viewed innies. You are not a real person. You will do what I tell you to do. In this episode, Dylan and Mark rounded it out. Each of them had the communication of sorts with the innies. And in the case of Dylan, like you said, it was getting the letter from the outie. And one that, particularly the way that it started off, which was pretty confrontational with point number one, it was a lot more nuanced than I was expecting. And I'll get to the one with Mark in a second, because I want to ask you about that with Dylan. And that's a thing where it seems to be showing that out of any of the four, the Macrodat ones, that perhaps they are sort of the closest to each other. You could make a case with Irving, with the innie and the outie potentially having a lot in common as well. But in the case of Dylan, and when the outie sort of conceded, well, you know, gee, we have the same physiology. It's no wonder you would fall in love with, you know, my wife / our wife. It was a much more nuanced kind of thing than I was expecting to see, particularly when, in one of the funniest moments, Milchick lays the letter down on the table and books out the room.
Right. And I mean, one thing, too, about Severance, and we've seen this also with a show like White Lotus as well, is that they really do play on the emotions of the audience.
Yes.
And really sort of allow us into the minds of these characters in comparison to a lot of other TV, which I, let's say, like, you know, you sometimes learn about people and how they work within themselves in other shows, but it feels like it's more nuanced, but it's also in a way that the story allows these characters to tell it themselves instead of the opposite, which a lot of TV shows sometimes do, which is the characters put themselves in the situation, and then they have to describe and discuss everything that's going on. But it feels more like, at least in that case too, it was a very, you know, I would say it's a poignant moment on some level, because it's the realization of, you know, Dylan's outie, realizing that his innie is a real person too on some level. And it feels more like we saw also too with Mark and Helly Arthur most of the season, is that they just, that it's a weird situation, because it's something of a, and it was the big point and sort of the flashpoint of this episode, was the whole discussion between innie Mark and outie Mark about you're not, you being a real person, but also not being a fully realized person itself. And I think that's also got brought up in the final scene when they finish off Cold Harbor as well, when they're when him and Helly are making the reference to the equator.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a very interesting show. And I really also feel like too, what's going to end up happening is that we're going to get more information and more data. The one thing that is concerning, and I feel like this is the issue of all drama shows, is sometimes they can go off the rails. You run out of plot lines, you run out of plot devices, and it feels like there's going to be some questions in season 3 and season 4 with pacing and what they will reveal versus what they will not reveal for future seasons. So it's tough, because we all know with drama shows, it's either it goes really well and they extend a long point, or you run into situations where a lot of people would use Lost as the best example. Like, it had some very strong early seasons, and then it kind of was the cash cow for ABC, and they milked the cash cow essentially as much as humanly possible. Right. So they extended it for way too long. So it's going to be really interesting to see what Apple TV does with this. Again, if, you know, the service, I would think to most people is either something that's bundled with Apple One, as part of something I already have, or I am purchasing it just for this show.
Yeah.
And feels like though that's going to be a very interesting thing for Apple TV Plus, is that they can lose the money. It's not the issue. The real question is that what do they want to be is going to be their real question as a streaming platform, just in general. Like, do they want to be HBO? Do they want to be like the, you know, what HBO was in the 90s or in the early 2000s? Or do they want to be more building up their whole platform? Because it feels like of all the streaming services outside of maybe Paramount Plus, it's not as highly regarded as some of the other ones at this time.
Yeah, no, you're right about that. And the way that it sort of evolves from a business perspective is going to be fascinating. And again, as we've been tracing this through the course of the last couple of years here on the show with this fun little mini series we've been doing and revisiting from time to time on the business of the streaming industry. And yeah, that's a big one right there, is that how Apple TV Plus can leverage what they have here towards their overall business strategy, because it is their franchise. And there's another Apple TV Plus show. This is not exactly reminiscent in this way, but watching Hello Tomorrow, which I think you had gotten me on, and it's a really good one. That's one that is overtly retro-futuristic. So it's set around mid-20th century America, but there are some devices in there that are, I think, like what they imagined the future might be as far as what devices would be. So it was kind of fun to watch in that sense. This one is not exactly that, but it plays around with eras, it plays around with timelines, and it doesn't, outside of phones and maybe a handful of other things, like when you look at the architecture of the cars and everything else, and certainly the computers, you would think it's set in a further back time, but as best as we can tell, it's set in present day America. I say all that to say this, your reference to Mark and Helly when they said, you know, see you at the equator. My first thought is, a show that isn't so strongly rooted in the 20th century, ethos-wise, music-wise, like they used, it was a classic 60s tune, I forget which one it was at the end there, but it was like the one that like immediately comes to mind, if you weren't sort of glued to doing retro 20th century stuff, is, you know, part of me is thinking, and somebody's going to have a dub up on YouTube of this. Somebody's going to have a dub of that final scene, and they're going to have it set to Meet Me at the Equinox. You know, that's what it's, you would think, right? That was the first thing I thought of in the moment there. Yeah. I mean, that's a natural, isn't it, Ben? Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, you gotta just give credit to the whole team there. And, you know, in terms of just how the finale was paced, I thought it was really well done.
Yeah.
And the ending shot too is very reminiscent of a lot of these older, you know, foreign films where you have the final, you know, chaotic scene, and then you have the freeze frame and then slide down. So it felt a lot, if I remember properly, I think it was in either French or Italian cinema, mm-hmm. about that sort of set shot at the end, and then they pan over, then they has the culmination of the music and the effects.
Yeah.
And then it slides in the title card.
Yeah, I mean, they played around with that. I mean, I think Tarantino did a little bit of that with the Kill Bill movies, I think, at the very least. I remember kind of seeing it there. That's a great trope. I love to see that. It really sort of fit for what they were building towards. And again, this season finale, the season two finale, Cold Harbor, it was bookended, basically, with the thoughts in the head of Innie Mark. And basically, and I had read coming into this, that it was going to be, and I think sort of the promotional angle was built around this, as far as what I think some of the creative and cast members were talking about this conversation between Innie and Outie Mark at the cabin. And I didn't know if that was going to be literal, if the chip was going to be kind of going so that they would be going back and forth in the same room in the same place. It was so much better the way they did it, as far as the recording into, once again, a camcorder here, a little bit sort of retro with the technology, but going back and forth. And you start to see for the first time this conflict that could arise between Innie Mark and Outie Mark. And this is something where, to their credit, you really hadn't had to think about this a whole lot beforehand, because it was a thing of like, well, Innie Mark loves Helly. Outie Mark is trying to get, you know, Gemma back. I mean, that inherently was a conflict, but it was more so in the background. The opening parts of the episode put it right there in the foreground and introduced this conflict that was there between the characters, and the way that it was resolved at the end with the decision that Innie Mark made when he looked through the glass and he just saw the person that he believed to be Miss Casey. He didn't even really, I don't even know in that moment if he necessarily remembered that it was Gemma. He might have, he might not have, but all he knew when he looked at her was that he didn't feel anything for Miss Casey, and that inevitably, you know, Helly arrives back there. There are some conspiracy theorists that will tell you it was Helena because they think she gave a cruel look to Gemma. I think she just gave a sort of confused look, or a kind of like, hey, sorry, I'm running off with, you know, the other half of your guy, however you want to phrase it. But that whole thing there, the conflict between Innie and Outie Mark, that it really kind of manifested itself at the end of the episode in maybe the defining moment of the show thus far. It's rooted in communication. And it's me and you being a couple guys that are communications professionals, my degree being in that. It's one of those things where you look at things, you have to remember that not everything is sort of an artificial plot device. Because I could have fallen into that trap. Like, did Outie Mark really have to screw the pooch that way, as far as the way he was sounding condescending, and he botched Helly R's name, really the same way that Helena did with botching Gemma's name, which pissed off Outie Mark. And the whole thing with Rigabi, too. Is it a plot device that Rigabi is just, you know, unable to connect with anybody on a personal level, and she just basically screams at them to listen to her, which is not an effective way of dealing with people? But then you remind yourself that it's a very human thing. And that's what happens, is that a lot of times there are breakdowns in communication. They happen all the time in all of our lives, very frustratingly so. And we get to see it played out on the biggest stage here.
Right. And I think this season, and one thing that Severance is very good at, is playing on emotion and colors. Like, they mm-hmm. did a really good job this year, especially at the end of the amount of chaos that was going on with Gemma and Mark just running around through all those tunnels, and the fire alarm is going off, and all the colors of the reds and the greens just were there. It's just, it was a real sort of question, and I think it was positive at the end of the finale too, is if there are two versions of yourself, the one that's at work and the one that's out in the real world, those are two different versions of yourself. And it's a real debate, like, who are you truly just as a human being? And I think the whole thing at the end there too is that, you know, Innie Mark was at, by choosing Helly R instead of going out and being with Gemma, it tells into this whole scenario that Innies have their own emotional capacity. And in that moment, he did not have any contact with the person on the outside. All he knew was essentially his relationship with Helly R at that period of time.
And he had saved her. I mean, Mark S. is always somebody that's been very duty bound. So he did this. At the end of the day, he saved an innocent person who was being held captive. And in his mind, he might have thought, you know, I've wiped the slate clean on that. I will tell you that, and I had alluded to this off air, because I am somebody that's a ravenous consumer for any shows that I watch. I'm looking for as much feedback as I can find as possible. That will, of course, always lead you to the ringer for some of these prestige shows there. Ben Lindbergh getting a little cute with it, I thought, in his one column here, where he was talking about, he almost seemed to be taking the side of the doctor who had fallen in love with some of Gemma's, you know, any characters, where he was like, you'll kill them all. Because Ben Lindbergh made a point that, like, when Mark S. walked in that room, in the Cold Harbor room, and Gemma's just created Innie was in there dismantling the crib, that like when he took her into the hallway, that he killed that Innie without a second thought. And that's like, how far do you have to go out of your way to want to make a point to say something like that? I mean, it's one of these things where, again, you watch this show, and particularly somebody like Gemma, where there's multiple Innies. There's 25 of them now, okay? So you can't watch this show without thinking you got to break some eggs to make an omelet. No matter what happens, 25 versions of Gemma are going to die. It's just a matter of which one makes it out the door. And the one that made it out the door was the one that was most invested, the longest invested on planet Earth as far as being here. So the whole, I'm seeing a lot of sympathy for the Innies that's out there on Reddit and some other places, but I think you can take that way, way, way too far.
Yeah, and I think the question too, and I think thing that's speculated the most on Reddit and X and all these other social media platforms is who is who at this point. And you discussed it earlier. Was it Heliar? Was it Helena at the end? Was it also too, like, we also have had discussions over this entire timeline too, Rick, of some of these outie characters and their relationship to Lumen. And we're going to see more too. And there's many storylines I still need to wrap up. We still don't know where essentially at the end of the episode where like, what is Milchick going to do with this little sort of worker uprising and
right
the narrative too. And we don't know where Miss Wong went. So she was all that was kind of with all these things up there at this point. Like, that storyline had its own sort of interesting ending about her going off to this, I'm trying to remember exactly off the top of my head, but some, I guess, Lumen, how do we put it? Like a Lumen's, satellite office, I guess? Or
yeah.
It wasn't really fully explained.
Facility.
Kind of, to me, felt like they were doing that intentionally so that there can be another potential season base, location base for a future season. Or it's just going to be very interesting because the finale for season two answered a lot of questions, but there's still even more questions than what we started with.
Right.
So it's just going there. There's plenty of plot devices and plot of where things can go from here. But the real question, I think, going back to your last question, is that you're wondering who is who at this point. And it's one of those weird things. You see this a lot in like whodunit sort of murder mystery shows where the character is allowed to wear different faces essentially.
Right.
And essentially with this is like, we don't know what else is in Lumen too. Like, there's also discussion, like, we now know about the elevator, but we don't, if we know anything about elevators, they can go up and down to a bunch of different parts of the building. So
yep,
there's still opportunity there as well. It's just, the only thing, and we've discussed this with drama TV shows before, season two is usually a very peak season, but then it does tend to go downhill. So I'm hoping that the Severance writing team can kind of built in a fact to keep answering questions, but not fully like answering everything, essentially.
Yeah, I hope so. And based on what we've seen thus far, I think there's every reason to believe that. And so the whole question of the Innies and the Outies, one of the thoughts that I'd had over the course of the last couple of days is, and again, I always try to look at these things, you know, particularly for all of the complicated, nuanced, moral sort of considerations and weighings that there are with this show here, to just try to cut through it in essentially, you know, the most common sense kind of a way possible. And in doing that, I was sort of led to the thought that when you look at the innies and this whole thing, like, well, the innies have rights too. They're people too. You look at it, Mark S., Helly, Dylan, who'd had his time with Gretchen, Irving R., who, you know, we come to find out, you know, the outside Irv basically said, you know, I haven't had, you know, a connection like that with somebody like I had with any Bert, that it's really a thing where they're playing with house money at this point. I mean, I don't mean to sound insensitive about what happens to them from here, but like, could any of them, when they first started in the macro dat section there, could any of them thought that they would have had not just the work life that they've had and the accomplishments that they've had, some of which are going to taste very bitter when they find out what they've been doing for this evil company, but they have a right to feel accomplished, as, you know, early Dylan did. Dylan felt very accomplished early season one, et cetera. I think all of them did to some degree, except Helly never really did. But the personal fulfillment that they felt on the inside, to me, they're playing with house money. This whole thing of like, they have equal rights to people on the outside, whatever. They've already gone so much further than any of them could have ever thought when they were quote unquote born on that conference room table.
Right. And I mean, essentially at that period of time too, we also have to talk about how from season one to season two, their world got a lot bigger than it used to be. And it feels more too that, especially in the episode where they all, you know, essentially where Helly, you know, Helena gets revealed, essentially. You're going to see some like really interesting sort of abilities to build different things just overall. That's what I would think.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Like this was a very contained show season one. It got a little bit less contained in season two, and now there's the opportunity in seasons three and four to really build the Lumen world, as so to say.
Well, and there were a few things here. There was one thing where, again, and I just it would break my heart for a show I love as much as this one, if I was to regard anything as any kind of a convenient plot point or anything like that. So I don't know if that's what I necessarily think. And this is in an area where I'm going to have to kind of struggle to keep this observation PG-13. But as far as the whole Mark and Helly, Mark and Helena kind of a thing here, okay? So let's back up to the fact, I thought it was weird that Audi Mark found out off camera that his innie was, you know, dialed up with Helly R., particularly when he'd had that meeting in the Chinese restaurant with Helena. Now, it turns out to be the very same day that their innies actually had sex together. But that's the point I want to ask you about. Like, that one there, I mean, I suppose unless there was, you know, a level of protection that was not really implied in that scene there, okay? If you're Mark riding up in the elevator, if you're Helly riding up in the elevator, how do you think you had just another day at the office? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I don't get that part. They never explained that part away. There's only so much you can do to clean yourself up afterwards. So it's a thing where I just really, that part I don't kind of get. But it's a thing where I guess if Mark was told on camera, then that might have led to a conversation with him and any Mark that might have kind of derailed and gone in a direction that would have been unproductive. Honest, you got to think that Audi Mark would have been horrified if he knew that any Mark had slept with either of the versions of Helena. Turns out it was both, because Audi Mark would have regarded that as cheating on Gemma. So that's a super complicated kind of angle to an already super complicated dynamic between four different characters here. But there were parts of that there where it was just like, they told the story the way that they told it. And I'm not quite, you know, ready to put that down to convenient storytelling, but it may have been, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, there's still a lot of unanswered questions. And one of the big questions I think that they were discovering with season two too is how innies themselves are essentially, you don't want to say they're children, but they're like, they only understand the world that they understand. Like, what is it like? They have, like, that's, I would say that's sort of differentiator between sort of things, is that they understand concepts and things, but they still make mistakes and they still don't understand. Like, it's still not fully, it hasn't been fully realized just for any characters at this period of time. Like, what is their true extent of all their knowledge, essentially? Yeah. Like, is it just everything from the past? Is it from their outie self? Is it, are they a completely new person and just have their own sort of mental fortitudes and abilities? Or is it completely something different to the lines of, like, if you're an innie, you're a completely new version of yourself, mm-hmm. and you understand certain things. And it was interesting to see, like, probably the biggest part of this entire season was the Heliar, Helena, Mark relationship. And it feels more like there's going to be a lot to build with them in the near future. And again, too, like, I feel like at some point this is building. This may be a prediction, but Dylan's going to find love somehow. We don't know how, but mm-hmm. something is going to fall into his scenario, because you would think that his appreciation of his outie's wife is going to turn into something for a future season.
It very possibly might. Yeah, I think that's entirely possible. And I think the whole thing, too, when you're looking at the innie outie situation here, I've seen some speculation on Reddit, and it seems to be very, very well-founded, because I think that's why they dropped the hint that they did at the beginning of the episode, towards the beginning, when Jamie Egan was talking to Heliar for the first time, knowing he was talking to Heliar, because in the season one finale, he didn't know he was talking to Heliar. But when he was basically complimenting her and saying that she's better than the original one, because I think he's seeing a level of fight and determination in her that he's beaten out of Helena. So it just, you know, talk about blaming the victim in that way. But anyways, I'm seeing speculation, and I believe it, that he's going to offer to have Heliar get turned on 24/7, that she will be the only one that's basically activated. They will kill Helena. And my guess is if they do that, she's, I could see her going for that deal if she says, okay, but any Mark's coming with me. And maybe that's the big dilemma of season three. And maybe that's the whole struggle to try to get outie Mark back, is that basically if any Mark, and if he's willing to go for that, and you got to think that he would, because he kind of showed at the end of the episode, as desperate as he was for what, even 10 more minutes with Heliar, that he was going to do that. The whole seeming futility of running away the way that they did. If either of them finds out that it's not just futility, and it might seem like a deal with the devil in terms of this family and this corporation, methinks they'd both go for it. And that sets up a huge conflict plot point going forward.
Yeah, and I think one of the other bigger questions that we're going to have to learn in future seasons is, what is the Lumen's role within society as well? Because it's been a very contained first 2 years, where there is some negativity about the whole, like, it's been like discussed in outie scenes about people's own views about this whole system, essentially. But I guarantee you, in season three or season four, they're going to discuss the outside world's overall discussion of what Lumen really is.
Yes.
Because again, these first two seasons have been very insular. And we've mm-hmm. seen, like, on the outie scenes of, like, people being critical of Lumen. But we've never really seen, like, what does the world think of Lumen? And I think that's partially, too, why Ms. Wong's character was moved to that satellite office, or gained that ability to go to that, to help build that overall world as well, just for it, because it's very rare a show. It's very, like, it feels like a lot of season one, there was a lot of bottle episodes, essentially. They mm-hmm. were all in the same area. There wasn't a lot of major discussions.
Right.
But now, like, you can see the growth in season two and potential for three and four, like, where they can go with the storylines.
Yeah, yeah. And it was really, as you said, exciting in season two to see so much more of the outie world. Here, season one was so heavily weighted towards the innie world, and this was more of a real sort of buffet of what you were getting with the different sides of it. But there were some other things here as we start to kind of bring it all the way around, because I've gone through sort of most of my notes on this thus far. I want to ask your thoughts on a few things, first of which being when they reach 100% and Mark does that, and it's the moment of triumph and whatever, and you start to hear Sirius playing, like, you of all people. Like, I was thinking, you're like, oh, Ben's got to be popping like a mofo for this one.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and the interplay between Milchick and...
And
I guess you want to call it a dummy, I guess? The dummy Akir, I mean.
Yeah.
I guess, well, that's good. That's part of it, too. And I mean, the marching band, like, I, I, if at the end of the episode, they had like the sort of the production recap of everything.
Yeah.
That was essentially settled on as the thing that happened when he reached 100%. And it was a very interesting world because at the beginning of season one, the world was very contained within Lumen. And now it feels like the world is getting much bigger for the innies more than anything else.
Right. Yeah. And the other thing too, being that after, you know, you had the celebration and you could see Jamie Egan celebrating along with everybody else, you know, in their different places as they were watching, you know, Cold Harbor get achieved. It was one of those things where, again, like particularly the way that the Egans carry themselves and speak and like the people around them and the language that they use and everything like that, such that like Helly was, she was just like creeped out by him being there. Just like, you know, you are one weird piece of work. Just the way it made you all the more unprepared for when things went south, that Jamie Egan just drops a couple of F-bombs, like two different quick scenes where he does. And it's like, you're not expecting that from this very polished kind of a guy. I'm not sure what I would expect to fly out of his mouth at what has to be one of the worst moments of his life because he's built everything up to this. But that was not what I was expecting.
No, I was not expecting that either. And I mean, they did. You also saw like the frenetic energy of those scenes too, of just Audi Mark essentially infiltrating everything and, you know, having to fend off the doctors and the assistant.
And Drummond, yeah.
Yeah, and Drummond. Like, they had to essentially, he had to get past all these people, and it's going to be really, really interesting to see how they also deal with death, because, you know, we had a character death for sure in this episode. And it's going to be really interesting to see, like, how do you explain that away, too, at that point?
Yeah, I was wondering that, because a second henchman to go down, but this is the first one they know about because it was on their premises. Right. The season one thing, they just disposed of the body off campus when Rigabi killed him. But it was a thing where, yeah, that was pretty shocking that it went down that way. And just it was a little bit of sort of, you know, comedy of errors kind of a thing of like when Mark switched over in the elevator, that just kind of triggered his finger and the finger shot the, you know, dart gun or whatever the heck it was right into the guy's carotid artery. But that was like the other thing, too, the beginning of that climactic fight in the hallway there. It was a thing where maybe some of it was the camera angles and it didn't last long. But like when you watched it, were there elements of it of like in the early parts of it where the way they were filming Audi Mark of where it looked a little Three Stooges-esque. There were like moments where it's like, I don't know, am I supposed to kind of be laughing a little bit? I mean, it didn't last long, but I kind of felt that way briefly.
Right, and I could see that too. I mean, and again, they just how they built this world and how the world has been designed too. It's like, it's very striking, and especially that fight scene nearing the end of the finale, like the way it was shot was very sort of more reminiscent of a lot of like action thriller movies,
mm-hmm.
more than it was been like, it was a very bloody episode at the end. It was a very red episode.
Yes. Yes. The red imagery was everywhere to be found. And again, quite literal at that point with all the blood that Mark had on him. And again, he was able to figure it out there when he couldn't get the hand sensor thing to work. Maybe if I use Drummond's blood. So that was something that he was able to kind of get figured out in the spur of the moment. And yeah, ultimately just, I just felt like, again, a masterpiece. I watched it again the next day. It was interesting to watch, you know, just kind of knowing what was coming, but seeing the anticipation, seeing if there was anything that I'd potentially missed leading up to it, any kind of hints, you know, on there. And that was the thing where I can't say that the end part, I didn't, it was one of those things where you didn't really hear anything about the conflict between the Innie and the Audi after really the beginning of the episode, other than when Mark R. was talking to Helly right before he finished Cold Harbor, when he was kind of, you know, voicing some of his doubts back and forth about this or that. But I feel like, again, the beginning of the episode was meant to show you where it was going to go at the end of the episode. And it was just the way that they did it. It was just absolutely iconic. I mean, I sat there and watched it, and it was just, you know, it was heartbreaking to watch as a viewer, but it was meant to be. And that's what builds the stakes for season three. Not heartbreaking, apparently, to everybody on Reddit. It's like, good for Innie Mark and LER. And like, you know, it's one of those things where, like I said, I go back to, you know, what the stakes are here. Like the Innies, The Innies have already won for the existence that they've had. You know, the Audis were here first. They've built a bigger thing. Mark Scout was a complete moron to have done the communicating the way that he did. Like, you know that little thing you got for Heliar, like, or when he botched her name, whatever he called her, Heli E or whatever. Well, take that and multiply it by a million, and that's me and Gemma. Like, he shouldn't have said that. But, I mean, I don't know. Dude wasn't necessarily lying either, it seems like.
And, I mean, it's also tough to tell, too, Rick, because we, as part of the Severance scenario, we still don't know, like, the mindset of these characters. Because we, at least in a lot of the time, we see the Innies being very not emotional, but almost like they have an emotional capacity different from the Audis, essentially.
They do.
At this point. And you do wonder, like, how they're going through everything. Because, we know what the process of being severed is doing, but we also don't know exactly, like, what are the rules at this point. We got a little bit of it from the Harmonies episode a little bit, but outside mm-hmm. of that, we still don't really have all the full details yet.
Right. And that as you're saying that, the song that starts playing in my mind is from the Sunny episode, The Gang Turns Black. What are the rules? What are the rules? That's what I'm thinking of as you say that. But yes, we need to know what the rules are here. And more of that is going to get spelled out as we go along. And again, that pretty much kind of takes me through my notes. Anything that I missed that you want to cover?
I do think one thing that I do think is going to be very, very interesting is if we're going to get any, like, Milchick, Miss Wong interplay in season 3 or season 4. Because
sure.
At least it was, for most of the season, the discussion was, is it's the whole thing with Milchick is that it's the argument of him going against, it's him having his own views, but then having to deal with the Innies, but then also having to deal with management as well. And that's right. Also, it's like a common work trope we see in everyday America.
Right.
And it's going to be really interesting to see, like, how we build. And there's going to be more opportunities to world build with, like, Kier as well, because we got little snippets of it in season 2 during the retreat as well. So they got a lot of room to grow and room to go. But also the question also, too, is that where the direction will be in season 3 and what their major plan will be.
Well, and that's the whole thing, too. And it's very interesting. And it was a little bit of a misdirection, although part misdirection, part character building, because everything they've done with Milchick is to show you the whole thing of, like, whether, and I think they're painting it that as some of it as a black man, I think he feels that he's sort of put upon at the company there, that he sort of feels like he's being treated a little bit differently because of this, that, like, other people use big words, but he gets singled out, whatever turmoil he's feeling towards what's getting put on him standing up to Drummond. Now, that's a character building moment that's going to keep paying off. But in terms of the thing of, like, uh-oh, Drummond's going to get him at some point. Well, that was misdirection because he didn't live long enough. So we'll never know what Drummond would have done to get back at him for mouthing off to him and tell him to consume feculence or whatever he the first word was. I forget what it was. But anyways, so we'll never get to see how that would have played out. But we're going to still kind of see here. Now, maybe he keeps getting promoted up the ladder here, much like he did with Cobell being gone, because now Drummond's gone. So maybe he gets promoted somehow. But then again, maybe he's going to get scapegoated for what's going on here. And maybe he won't even get the chance because, like I said before, maybe he just gets held hostage for a prolonged period of time here. And that's how basically this thing goes. But I guess that would be sort of my prediction if I'm going to blend together a couple of Reddit theories, is that the situation with Dylan and the band, that basically you've got, like, sort of like a prison riot type situation here. And then I'm guessing that it resolves itself by Jamie Egan basically, you know, going to lay down the grand bargain here of letting, you know, Heli R basically become the full-time Heli / Helena, which, by the way, would be very interesting because presumably Dylan would want in on that as well. So maybe that's how Audi Dylan ends up getting elbowed out the process in the first place. Maybe any Dylan is full-time Dylan, and maybe Mark S. becomes the full-time Mark S. / Mark Scout, the Innie and the Audi. So that's kind of my early prediction, is that the Innies are actually going to kind of win in the early part of season 3, because I think that Jamie Egan is going to see that as the way to basically get Heli in a position of power like he thinks that she needs to be in. Couple all this with Gemma is going to be a wanted person. She's going to be in hiding. They want that chip, and it's still a company town, no matter what comes out about what they've done, which they're going to try and cover up to the best of their ability. So there's a lot of chaos that they're going to be starting with season three. I think arguably more so than season two. I mean, we waited for 3 years, those of us that watched season one in real time, like, how are they going to resolve all of this? There's an equal amount, if not more so, heading into season three, I believe.
Yeah. And I think there's an opportunity to continue the world building, and on top of that, really explore the relationship of Mark and Heliar for most of the new season.
Yes, I think that's going to be the case here, and I think the glimpses of Audi Mark are going to be fleeting at best for a long time to come, because I think that's what they're basically setting it up here, and it's going to be Gemma now, with the roles being reversed, her trying to get Audi Mark back into her life, so and the lives of the family and friends. But again, an amazing season two, an amazing franchise, I think, thus far through the first two seasons. A season two finale that, to me, somehow exceeded my high expectations. I mean, it's hard to do when your expectations are sky high, but I just kept sitting there like, man, it can't get any better than it is right now, and they just kept going to another level by the time it was all over with. So just amazing to watch, and equally so to be able to break it down with you, Ben Chu. Thank you so much for being here today, my friend.
No, I appreciate it, Rick. Thank you.
Thank you, Ben, and thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge mini episode 1818.